it's Chuck again from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. That was a song called Build You a Barn off of Jennifer Kimball's new album, Avocet. This album is wonderfully written and arranged and includes several incredible Boston musicians. It is directly because of these fine people that Jennifer began recording this album, as you will soon hear. Jennifer was half of the critically acclaimed band The Story in the early 90s, which was a springboard for her career as a solo artist. Her beautifully personal lyrics and haunting instrumentation created an album that we've been playing over and over again. Before we begin, let me quickly tell you about a local charitable organization that we support called Gaining Ground. Gaining Ground grows organic produce for hunger relief with help from an army of volunteers, and they give it away to people who need it for free. Throughout the harvest season, produce from Gaining Ground's farm goes to food pantries, meal programs, and shelters in Greater Boston and Eastern Massachusetts. Their approach is local and sustainable, and most of their produce is distributed within 20 miles of the farm and within 24 hours of harvest. To learn how to support Gaining Ground, and for more information, please visit gainingground.org. Okay, so a bit into our conversation, you'll hear a second song by Jennifer called Someone to Read To, and we were fortunate enough to have her play a few songs at the end as well. So, here is our conversation with Jennifer Kimball, recorded at Woods Hill Table in Concord, Massachusetts.
When are you going to put the AC on?
It's on, believe it or not. Yeah. It's set for 74 degrees. It's just like there's a lot of bodies in here now.
It's the uke.
Then it would be. The uke is heat. So hot.
Yeah, it's like it's such the a heat of compelling. The uke. We should just move it out back into the restaurant.
So you came out from Somerville, is that right?
I did. I made the big trip.
The big trip.
From Somerville.
I've been hanging out in Somerville a lot lately.
Have you?
Yeah, because I went to Porch Fest recently.
Yes.
You didn't play for a Porch Fest, did you?
No, I will. Eventually, one day, I will get that together. And it has that community feeling
it's a cool thing.
Hey, we're all on the porch, and isn't that cool? And
right.
We can also all pretend that we're 24, which is also the other thing. If you're very young, you really should be in Somerville, because there's so much hip stuff happening.
Just I love amazing. Pretending that I'm 24.
Isn't that great?
It's pretty cool.
I just like being carded now. Yeah. Oh, I'd love to give you my... Do you want to see my ID?
I get carded all the time now.
At the grocery store, they have to do that.
At the grocery store, they won't even... I look 97 years old.
My mom got carded at the grocery store. She's like 74. No, she's 72. She got carded at the grocery store.
Which is ridiculous. Like,
well, there used to be a liquor store down the street that if you didn't have an in-state license, they wouldn't even sell you alcohol. You had
in-state?
To be from Massachusetts to be... They wouldn't even sell it to you.
That's Vermont used to have that too. Anyway.
We're off topic.
We're so glad you're
here.
We're
off topic.
We have our new intern, Katie, who's awesome. And she's trying to... Yes. And she's trying...
And who has the best hair in the whole place.
She does? Yeah, she does. Like, well, it's better than my hair, certainly. Yeah. But yes, you have wonderful hair, Katie.
Hair press.
And Ike, of course, is here, Board of Advisors member. So
We usually don't have this many people here. Yeah. But what was I going to say? You interrupted me.
I don't know.
I had something really funny to say and interesting.
I bet it was hilarious.
They just had, I think it was Arlington Porch Fest this last week, and they're in a bunch of towns.
It is a great thing. It's a fantastic thing. Park. Community building, and it's so much for a lot of kids participate. And
whereabouts, what's your exact address? No, I'm kidding. Where do you, are you living in Winter Hill or something like that?
I live in near Union Square, the flat part, near the old factories.
Yeah, it's a cool town. I've been hanging out there more and more just because of... different things. But what are you looking at?
Have you been to Aeronaut?
I've had their
Brewery.
Beer.
Yeah, good beer. And
good place to play, right?
Yeah.
His band.
Yeah, my husband actually played in the main room where everyone's drinking. And it's totally fun and a really cool place. We've been there long enough to see that whole transformation from the Envelope Factory to Aeronaut, Brooklyn Boulders, Artisans Asylum.
Hmm. And we were just at the Sinclair, and it used to be a brewery before the Sinclair.
Yeah.
Sort of all full circle. Aeronaut is sort of both.
Aeronaut is sort of both.
So it's a brewery venue.
It's a.
I've never been there.
Is that? Can we call it a brenu?
A brenu?
Yes. Yeah. A brewery.
A brewery. Very nice.
A what?
I like the brewery.
Nothing, Chuck. Went right over his head.
I don't think I can even say that word. Brewery.
Just edit it out.
Say it like funnily.
Okay. You guys really. You got your mojo really going.
Yeah. You know. We just. It's how we warm up.
Yeah.
Now we're done. Thank you for coming. I've been listening to your album all day long. It's just been on a loop. And I love it.
Oh, thank you.
I really love it.
Thank you.
I do like all the music that's come on, but this really kind of struck a chord with me. I don't know why. I'm trying to figure out why, but you know, with the orchestration and all the different instrumentation you have on there, and the story about how it actually began, and I know you've told the story a million times, but I'd love to hear the story again, like how that happened, the beginning of this album, Evisset, how that came to be. Do you mind telling that story?
Sure.
Again?
Not all, I love to tell a story. It's my husband's a musician as well, and he basically set up a full studio session with a band and a couple of people I'd played with before and a couple of people I'd never met in Q Division in Somerville on my birthday a couple of years ago. And then he got me to arrive at the studio with a friend. All she told me was, well, I just have to drop off a guitar before I take you to your thing, you know, your birthday thing. I didn't know what that was. And so I walked into the studio with her, just saying hello to everybody. I knew everyone in the room. And the guy, we were dropping a guitar for Peter Mulvey, because this is Chris Delmhorst, and she was playing with him that night at Passim. And everybody was smiling and grinning, and nobody would really tell me what was going on. I kept saying, like, Gus, this is so great. What are you doing? You know, what are you recording? I hadn't seen people in a long time. I hadn't been
so
in the studio.
You were clueless. You still didn't know what was going
on. I was absolutely in the dark for another 5 minutes or so. And then finally, I asked Duke Levine, who's my oldest friend in the room, and I said, all right, Duke, what are you doing? He points at me and says, we're making your record. That was, oh God, I did not know it until that moment. And then I, of course, burst into tears and ran out of the room. No, I didn't run out of the room, but I got, you know, pulled it together, and somebody brought my instruments from home, and we put down 4 tunes. Everybody had learned the tunes and made up new parts. And
who does this? I mean, that's...
It was a beautiful present.
And it really is.
It was a great gift, because I didn't know how to start making a record. It had been a while.
Exactly. When I saw that, it's a sort of dual purpose. I mean, it was a trigger to get this new amazing album out. Yeah. When was the last album you did?
I mean, now that the record's come out, it's 11 years since the last record. And when we started on that session, it was about 8 years. And then before that, it was 10 years. I'm not in a rush, apparently. I got my own schedule going. And things have changed a whole lot since the first record.
It's a good number of years.
21 years ago.
It's a lifetime, really.
Yeah, it's a really different game.
I love the clarinets. You know, it goes about saying the lyrics, your melodies, the structure. Because you don't really hear that in popular music or folk.
No.
Folk rock or whatever you want to call it.
I don't know what you call this music. Yeah, no, you don't. It's more of an orchestral instrument.
Yeah,
but things are moving and shifting so much. You know, when I first started recording, we ran so far from the word folk. That wasn't hip. Now it's something to embrace. You know, whether you're listening to Mumford & Sons or somebody a lot more folky, there's so many acoustic instruments. We take that for granted now, but back in the early 90s, you had to run from from the folk. So I think there's more orchestral music blending in now with whatever this is, folk pop, short songs with verses and choruses. Yeah. But also this extraordinary character, Alex Spiegelman, who produced the record and did all of the arrangements and basically played all of the instruments in the arrangements. All of the, I refer to them as the blowy things, but I know it's more the reedy things. But all those clarinets and saxophones and distorted flutes.
Distorted flutes. You have a glockenspiel in there, don't you?
Glockenspiel.
Another name for a band.
I love saying that word anyways. I like
Glockenspiel.
Glockenspiel.
Yeah, he says that in almost every episode.
I do.
Yeah.
Do you?
It wasn't even that you had the clarinet in there. It was just surprising. And
cool. Well, that's good. That's part of the... That makes me very happy.
Oh, good.
That.
Yeah, good.
Really happy.
What about some of the harmonies? Did you have your own vocal layered? Because I noticed, I forgot, maybe it was Birds and Love or Love and Birds
Love
or something
and
like
birds,
that.
Love and Birds, yeah.
Where there's a lot of intertwining harmonies. That's just you?
It's a lot of Jennifer.
A lot of Jennifer.
Well, there's one that had a guy singing in the background.
That's Alec. The last tune. He's the only other singer, except for Chris Delmhorst in the first session that we did, the surprise birthday session, which we kept Reedy River and Saturday Day from that.
Okay.
Session, and she sang on both of them. So she's in their way. She's in there in the background. But mostly it's me singing all the parts.
You know, Alec, he produced or maybe he mixed David Wack Museum.
Oh, yeah, they're buddies.
We were talking about them in one of the last podcasts because I know you're a big fan of them.
Those guys are great, yeah.
Yeah, they're awesome.
You started a lot of your music career in Amherst College.
I did, yeah. Right. That's where I met Jonathan Brook. We played music all through school, and then for 4 or 5 years after... Amherst and then changed our name to The Story.
I was in Burlington, Vermont at a place called Club Metronome.
Yes.
That you played at a few times.
Yes.
And I remember getting your CD. I think it's the second CD, the one where you guys got
Angel
a little
in
more.
The House.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Angel in the House, which is one of those albums that actually stuck with me. I'm going to blow up your head right now. Like Graceland and some of those other big guys.
Wow.
Because I think it was more of big a formative, boys. You know, I was probably 20 or so. And those songs were just fantastic. But seeing you live was very cool.
Oh.
Because what I noticed was the harmonies were just so intricate. I know that people have written about you in particular, sort of going for some of those harmonies, like where David Crosby or like get these sort of notes that no one knows. They know, but no one typically goes for. I remember that very well because the Metronome was like an amazing venue because it was not that big.
Yeah.
But it was intimate enough, but big bands would come through. And
second floor?
Second floor over Nectar's.
Yes, right.
Fish. Home of Fish. Yeah.
Home of Fish, right. Yeah.
It was like 92, I think I saw you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, there's something really, really formative about whatever music it is you're listening to at a certain age. It never leaves you. And in some ways, The Story is that for a lot of people. I know almost every gig I play, somebody says, I saw you play in 1991, you know, at the Belly Up and wherever that is, I don't know, Rochester. And they have a story to tell and they want to tell you. And it's amazing. It's really amazing. It's not like they're not trying to take anything away from what I'm doing now or what Jonathan's doing now, but there was something magic that happens when the two of us sang together. It really was electric live. But also something about that era of music for people around our age, wherever we are, in the middle somewhere, the Middle Ages.
So out of that, out of The Story, I mean, that's when you decided to start writing on your own. Before you got into The Story, was that initially your thought you'd start doing stuff on your own? Was an idea that kind of happened after the fact? Or?
It happened after The Story. I didn't know what, my whole life fell apart, actually. That was like, it was a crazy time. So it was a full reinvention. My marriage ended as well as this long relationship with my singing partner, Jonathan. If I wasn't going to be in The Story, if that wasn't my identity, who was I? What was I going to do? And I had another career as a graphic designer before I had to leave that because The Story was on the road all the time. But it was a big deal. We had a great run, and it was really hard to figure out what was next. And I really started to play more than I had ever played before. Hmm. I didn't really play instruments in The Story. I played a little bit.
You're more of just a singer.
Yeah, just harmony singer, really. So, you know, when you have this emotional collapse and you have to reinvent yourself, that's a pretty good time to start writing.
Someone to read to at night.
hopping around, but I did want to get back to when you went into the studio for this album. Did the fact that you were kind of surprised and not expecting to go record these songs that you've written, did the fact that you went in there cold, you know, just not even expecting this to start happening, and then you did those four songs, did that set in motion where you thought that album would go? Did that set the tone and the type of instrumentation, all that, did that set in motion how the rest of the recording went?
Yes is the short answer, in great part due to the presence of Alec Spiegelman in this band. I'd never played with him before, and he also brought with him the drummer from the band that he formed here at New England Conservatory called Cuddle Magic.
Right. Mm.
And they're just on another terrestrial plane. They just are, they're out there. It's beautiful, beautiful music. Mm. Hard to describe. Really beautiful music.
Cuddle Magic.
Cuddle Magic, everybody. Check it out.
How did you write these songs? Were they written on the guitar or the piano or something?
Mostly guitar. That was the other part I didn't answer your question about. That session wasn't really the beginning of the record. It wasn't intentionally, now I'm making a record. It was a great session. It was something I didn't have to worry about.
The surprise session.
The surprise session.
Yeah.
I didn't prepare. And that also, because I didn't know it was going to happen, and that puts you in a different place where there was a freedom to just play. And I couldn't worry about the fact that my chops were, you know, rusty or my singing wasn't perfect. I just had to have a great time and experiment with the sounds. And we played live in a circle, which I've never done in the studio before.
But plus they learned the songs on their own.
Yeah, they knew the tunes. There were six tunes, actually.
So they had to kind of figure out something that would go along with the basic melody and chord structure that you put together.
As you do.
Yeah, it's like a communal arrangement. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they all put their stamp and their personality on it.
Yes, and there's a beautiful combination of, like, Duke I've played with since The Story,
he's the man, huh?
He's incredible, and he knew the songs already inside and out, because I'd been playing them. I write them and play them, and I've been playing with this great band, rock band, The Guys. Duke Levine, Billy Beard playing drums, Richard Gates, and Kevin Barry. That's like a dream band. Absolutely fantastic. But there was something I didn't really know how to go further with the songs. And there was some place that they hadn't gone. It wasn't that I felt negative about it. I just wasn't sure. And so the recording session with people who knew the songs really well and people who had only heard the demo and with whom I'd never played, like, it was a great combination of toss things up in the air and let the time change. And the drummer was completely wild, just a whole different sound from any rock drummers I've ever played with.
Every part of it is interesting, especially when the glockenspiel comes in. And again, I wanted to just throw
God,
that.
God, you and the glockenspiel.
I think it might be the electric vibraphone.
I don't think there was a glockenspiel in the whole CD.
I'm so
Chuck.
Disappointed.
Yeah. Sadly, I'm afraid there isn't one on this record. But
so, were you just humoring me?
I was for a moment.
Being polite.
Call me on it.
But
that's
I do.
Okay.
There is glockenspiel on the other record I made recently for my Wintry Songs project.
The Wintry Songs project, right. I do know about that, yes.
Many glockenspiels
of
and
the
many
11, the 11T...
11-part harmony.
Yes, 11-part harmony. I like that word. That's another word. Maybe I'll say that instead of glockenspiel. 11T.
Please. What else you got coming up for gigs?
I have a break this summer, mm-hmm. and I'm working on... My people, we're working on the fall tour, which the touring for me at this point is sort of a few dates here and a few dates there.
Do you leave town? Do you go down to New York or anything? Or?
Yeah, I play in New England, but I haven't stretched out really much further. I don't have that same drive I did when I was younger. I don't need to play in San Francisco. It would be really fun.
And you have a family, right?
I have a family.
I
have a son.
Son,
who's
right?
Just turned 13.
Oh, wow.
Whew.
Yeah, I have a 12-year-old, so.
Right there with
you. A girl,
you.
Though.
Oh, yeah, totally different creature.
Yeah, they are.
Wow.
I don't know what I'm doing.
None
we have
of
two
us.
Of those so creatures.
I do.
I have one of each of the creatures.
You have one of each, and you have two.
Almost 12 and 9. And my 9-year-old is pretty into architecture.
Oh,
and
cool.
I saw about your landscape design.
Yeah, that's the other thing
and,
I do.
And what's funny is that she's also really, really into crafts. And brings him home. And you, I read that thing about you with like, you can't take the first grader out of me or something like that with us.
Yeah, and potato prints. And yeah.
Are you still doing that?
I can't stop. Yeah.
I mean, the landscape design too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, landscape design. That's my real job now. I focused really hard on this, getting this record out in this last year. And now it's landscape design time.
You're pen and pencil. You don't do
old fashioned.
Yeah,
you don't do computer stuff, right? CAD drawings and I should learn that one day. But
I've done CAD.
I do all with, you have?
I did ages ago, but I wasn't very good at it.
What's CAD?
AutoCAD. It's a computer design thing for architecture and things like that.
I went through a program that was affiliated with Harvard, and I learned how to do it all the old-fashioned way with a T-square and pencil, different lines or different weights of pencil.
But you also worked for Little Brown, and didn't you work in children's books?
I did, yeah.
What did you do for that?
That was before the story, so it's a really long time.
Oh, my goodness.
Before there was any AutoCAD.
Or your first job out of college was?
Graphic design.
Right. What do you think songwriting has to do with that and vice versa? Do they connect? Is there something in your brain that...
Yeah. I mean, there's something that the hand drawing always connects to forming songs and melodies. Whether it's specifically rhythmically, the way that you would draw like evergreen trees that would be kind of like jagged and sharp and that would be like fast. And or the way you make like soft clouds and prairies with flowers. And these are things like, or circular motions. It all connects to the way I think of sounds and melodies.
Huh.
And mostly when I write, it's words and music, or just music. Now, I'm not thinking of drums or things with really cool rhythmic patterns. It's really has been limited so far to the instruments I can play.
You think more in a melodic way.
In a simpler way is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. It's amazing to connect with people like Alec and Duke, who produced the record before this one, who do think that way.
Well, I think it's interesting that you started as graphic design, went into a duo and a band with a story, and then you kind of went back to music, and then you connected it with landscape design. So it's all sort of interwoven.
It is interwoven.
As an objective, you know, I'm just sort of...
Yeah. This seems to be the way that I'm living my life. I can't let go of either of them, and they both bring me a great amount of joy and huge paychecks. Whew.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know,
you
my dad...
You should try podcasting.
Huge I know, paychecks. You guys.
It's ridiculous.
Man, whew, the studios we're in, holy mackerel. I don't know how you... I mean...
You got to know the right people.
State of the art. It's amazing. Right,
so the lyric part, I did read something that, you know, someone compared your... They said if you took your lyrics out of the music, it would be just poetry. So I know, which is a very nice thing to say, right?
But I
totally agree. The lyrics you write, they don't seem just like stream of consciousness, and they seem very personal. They seem they're deep. They're thoughtful. I'm wondering, do you start with the writing? Do you start? You're doing both together? Are you putting your lyrics to already written songs, or
a little bit of all of those things?
Yeah.
But mostly, the lyrics and the melodies are traveling parallel paths. I have notebooks and shredded napkins and notes and all this stuff over here in the basket where I throw stuff. And then there's another process where I go through that stuff and see if I can make use of that phrase I thought was so cool at that time. And sometimes I can't. But then poems kind of come from that, or ideas. The melodic part of it and the chords just comes from messing around on the instruments, having fun playing. You know, even when you're not a virtuosic player, you hear things. Or I think my ears are just trained to like go, oh, that's really unusual. I like the way that sounds. And then I'll just play that pattern over and over. And then it's more of a conscious decision to sit down with the words and see if they talk to the music.
Were you an English major?
I was an English major, yeah.
So you've been writing your whole life? Were you a writer before?
Not as much. I write a lot now, and I find it really therapeutic. If you want to be a writer, you better damn well write. And you should write every day, and even if you don't use it, or the art of doing it, the practice of doing it, is really important.
And do you write anything other than poetry or songs?
I'm working on some different things. When my mom died, and a bunch of songs in this record still kind of go back to that time, it's been 15 years now, I did a lot of writing, and I haven't really had the energy or the heart or the guts really to go through that stuff. But that's a project always on the, it's really, really close in my peripheral vision, and I don't know what that will be. I think poems and prose, but I don't know.
And do you do any cover music at all when you play live?
I do. I like to, the songs I've written tend to be fairly serious. And I know this about myself now, and I need to let the mood kind of come up and be fun. And so I'll sing like a swing tune, a cappella, or favorite pop tunes. I've done Beach Boys tunes, and I love Neil Finn and
he's awesome.
House. And what else? Sometimes I sing tunes that my friends have written. Rose Cousins, Rose Polanzani, Chris Delmhorst. the troop of ladies.
Have you done
with whom I sing.
In the Gloaming?
Oh yeah.
For many recently at all or no?
No, I haven't.
So
that's
I actually
a beautiful song.
I had to look that up because I didn't know that that was an old. It's written in 1877.
Yeah.
And this is an incredible yeah. song that you know you and I remember you and Jonathan did live with Just Vocal.
We had to sing that in college in a play.
Really?
Somebody wanted to hear that and they sang it us the first verse. And I think that's all we sang was the first verse in a one-act play in, you know, 1983 or something, 1982. And it stayed with Jonathan, and then she wrote this really cool reharmonization of the song. And that's how the second verse and the third verse go into that.
Yeah, because your but vocals yes. are like together in a line, and then it's just like half step is just like freaking awesome.
Half steps are great. I'm glad we could get to that.
I
that's
love
really the crux
steps.
Of it, isn't it? Yeah. That's some deep stuff, the half step.
I can't tell if she's...
She's serious.
She's serious?
No, I'm really serious.
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten into quarter steps? I don't hear it yet, but I would like to.
I've heard of them.
It's very far away.
That's some messed up stuff.
Very far away.
Yeah.
East. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, very messed up.
But harmonies are, I mean, that's what you did for the story, and that's
yeah.
that's a huge thing for you. And I
huge.
Love, I mean, harmonies are just, not many people can do them on the spot. Like, they can just hear where you're
oh,
going
yeah.
and just know where you're going to go. So, I mean, is that why you do most of your harmonies yourself? Is
probably that? Because that's the first thing I really learned how to do as a singer, was how to make up the other stuff. How do you join the singers when they already have two parts and you want to make it sound like a chord? And you, I played piano when I was little, so I could imagine what the third note would be, and I would add that.
Hmm. And then you get your fourth.
And then the fourth and the fifth notes are just
ridiculous.
To dive for. It's yeah. like butter. It's just
nothing like a half step, but the fourth is to die for.
And I think I sing my own harmonies because I love to.
You love to do it.
And also, I mean, when you're making your own record too, it's kind of, it's fast.
When you do your own harmonies, it's certainly a different dynamic than if someone else does them. And it's not just, it's
right.
it's a tangible difference when you're doing your own harmonies too, when someone's just, someone else is doing it, like maybe even a male voice or someone in a totally different range
yeah.
is singing it. I mean, I think so.
Yeah.
It's like you're a human piano. It's really weird. You know, because
wow.
it's like all
right.
of those songs. It's
right.
like it's like J-E-N-I-F-F-E-R or something.
Wow. 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 Well, thank you, I guess.
I don't even know what that means.
On the other hand, when, like on the last record I made, my friend Chris Delmore sang, and
yeah.
she killed it, and she sang in a way I wouldn't have, and that it was brilliant, and it was perfect for the project.
She's on the same project with the 11T.
She's one of the 11Ts, yeah. When
and,
we can get her,
and that's and yeah. that's all women, right?
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah,
what
it's,
is the 11T? Is that
it's
a cappella?
I kind of no, no, it's strings and singers, and it's a group of women that I've kind of lassoed into doing this show. I love holiday music. I just
oh,
love
okay.
it all from Frank Sinatra through Gregorian chants. And my friend Rose Polanzani also shares a similar adoration of this time of year and this music. So we gathered together a bunch of singers
right.
and string players, so fiddles and cellos.
You do it all live or do you record
it's
it too?
Live.
Or?
We have one record, which is called Hark. The
all
band
right.
is called Wintry Songs huh. in 11-part Harmony.
Good holiday music like that is few and far between.
When it's done like with, like yeah. sort of with an interesting twist.
Yeah, there's a lot of twisting. I
yeah.
mean, I think that's the fun part also is engineering the songs to be totally different.
Yeah.
We're going to do the Frank Sinatra, for example, and the strings are going to play the trumpet parts.
Oh, okay.
And they're going to cop it, you know, note for note, and it's going to be really cool. Huh. And then the singers are also doing the singer parts, but also the string parts. And you get to, you know, swing it in the series of holiday music. It's fun to swing. So,
have you gigged solo just by yourself with this new album?
Yeah.
So how does that translate? I mean, it's complicated changes in there. It's not simple three chord stuff. It's so how do you handle that without having the vibraphone
the band,
and
yeah.
the band there?
Well, I wrote them in
right.
that the way that I wrote them, and the beautiful thing about this particular project is that you don't know really what they'll sound like solo because there is no guitar. My instruments, acoustic guitar and baritone ukulele are kind of my default instruments, are not on the record. There's like a couple of exceptions. There are moments of them, but But the parts that originated the songs, that where I wrote them, I figured them out, got taken out, which was really, really cool. So what was left is this fantastic arrangement with all these instruments that are mostly new to my ears from these songs.
That's very cool.
The chords and the melody are there, and everything else is, you know, is an invention that came around the song. So then when I go out and play by myself, it sounds different. I mean, it's me, it's my voice, and that there's the chord structure, but it doesn't feel at all like the record.
It's a different versions.
Yeah, different
That's
versions.
Cool. You could just get out there, really. Here's another Jennifer Kimball cover. It's going to sound not like the album.
But like your style, you're gonna
know exactly what this is.
I should do one of her whole albums. Well, yeah. That's a great idea. So glad I could come and talk to you about that.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear it. No, I mean to go and hear you live.
Do you prefer live or do you prefer going into studio? What do you like to do better? Is that a dumb question?
They're different animals. Yeah, they're different creatures. Yeah. But I mean, it's all about live. Yeah. Live is the shit. It's so much fun. And it's different every time. I can't sing one of my own songs the same way. Any song the exact same way. I like to mess with the melody. Sometimes the chords a little bit. You don't do that, obviously, when you're playing with a band. But yeah. If you're playing by yourself.
That's just cruel.
That would be cruel and unusual.
To improvise a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not an improviser, so instrumentally. So what I can do is change the time and slow things down, and I can actually substitute chords. I can make the song sound really different. And that keeps me on my toes, I find that. That's the love of it, live performance.
Yeah. So, I mean, since you've only gone in the studio once every 10 years or whatever it is,
yeah.
is it a not quite as enamored with the studio, or is it really just about I'm not quite ready? Or
that's a good question. I guess I just don't write songs that fast. I didn't let the business pressure really get to me, which is good and bad. It means I didn't put out a record every 2.5 or 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
I lost my love for that. I think all that touring with the story and then solo touring right after that. I wrote a whole bunch of songs and got a deal. I was very lucky. Right at the end of when you could get a deal.
Right.
Since 1997. Yeah, and then there was tons of touring after that. And then I didn't write anything new for a long time. I was just sick of it all. So I don't write fast.
Do you record at home?
Yeah, and the demos that Rye took to... you know, they're all on my computer. I have versions, some live versions where I've taught the song to a couple of people and we've played a gig and there's a recording of that. Or I just sit there with my phone and put it in as a voice memo.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh,
yeah.
Those are my demos.
It's the only way to remember anything anymore.
It's a brilliant way to remember things.
It really
and
is.
And it also means you don't, like, if you're not good at the software, you don't want to bother to learn GarageBand. I can do GarageBand, but I'm pretty bad at it, so... I just use my phone.
I have Pro Tools, I have GarageBand, and I always use my phone. I don't have the patience for it. I just want to get the idea down and remember it. And if I ever try to record myself, I'm always terrible at it. So
I feel that way. I feel like I'm happy to pay somebody who's fast.
Do you have something that you can play for us now?
Sure.
Well, I have one more question before you go.
No, before Chuck has this question.
Before you go.
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, Chuck, go.
It was, as we were setting up here, we mentioned that we have a lot of kind of mutual Facebook friends. Looking at the people you've played with, the community of people, I mean, first of all, the people who showed up at Q Division. They obviously love the hell out of you, right? These are people who just adore you. Because people just don't do that for people.
Well, your husband, that's like an amazing gift.
It was an incredible gift.
That's an incredible surprise.
It really is incredible. And so the community of musicians that you're with, you've been with them for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit, about that community in Boston. I mean, it seems like a pretty big, it's not like just five people. The tentacles go out a little further than that.
Yeah, there's some good long tentacles.
And you're still here. You didn't leave New England.
Right.
Right? So, and I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts about that, because we were talking to Andy Cambria.
Oh,
and he was talking about there's a huge bluegrass community.
Huge.
And he was just naming off all these names. They meet at the Cantab Lounge. You know, I like those little pockets of musician communities that will help each other out or appear at Q Division to help someone do an album. And
That's sort of a microcosm for that. I mean, it's very cool because at this podcast, we'd like to get it right from the horse's mouth, too, of the people that have been contributing to the scene, but also engaged with the scene, and it's all connected. So
There are a lot of great music scenes in Boston. I live in Somerville, and a lot of the gigs I play are in Cambridge and Somerville, and they're incredibly satisfying, fulfilling. I would be happy only playing those gigs. I think the fact that there are musicians booking the clubs, like Billy Beard has booked Toad and the Lizard Lounge, both of them from their inception. The existence of those clubs also is in large part due to the generosity and forward thinking of Charlie Christopher, who owns Christopher's, where Toad is attached to Christopher's. Right. You know, they don't make a lot of cash for him, but the fact that they still exist as clubs when clubs go under all the time is really remarkable. And so I would definitely have to shout out to those two, in particular for those two particular clubs. Should I say particular a few more times?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Particularly when I talk about Passim. Passim would be the third place on that list and also fosters this sort of culture of bringing up young songwriters and with open mics and the bluegrass people hit the cantab. And in terms of scenes, there's another thing which has happened. I was lucky enough to be in a band with Matt Glazer, who was chairman of the string department at Berkeley for years. He still teaches there. I don't think he's chair anymore, but he and another amazing jazz and bluegrass musician, John McGann, started the Roots Music Program at Berkeley. I'm not sure if Andy went through there, but lots and lots of fantastic, young, smart, traditional-oriented string players of all different kinds, fiddles and banjos and guitars, have been through music school, and a lot of them have stayed here and also gone to the New England Conservatory as well, and I know now that schools are merged, right. But there's something about that scene as well that has nurtured the way we play music here. I don't think I would be playing with Celtic string players in this winter thing if I hadn't connected with all of them through Passim, and it's really through Laura Cortese, who's a brilliant musician, fronting her band playing fiddle, like crossing this sort of trad stuff, and she's a powerhouse performer, amazing performer. So, you know, I can play her songs on my instruments as well, and she's been a big part of our scene, and that bridged to this other Celtic scene, which I know nothing about that kind of music, but I'm learning about it, and I'm so jazzed by the way these women play. So that's a really beautiful thing about the Boston scene, having the music schools here and having enough of a club scene. I've only mentioned a few clubs, but there's enough of a scene to play. It's still not an easy living to make, but people figure it out.
I think why it's good to hear about that is that that's one of the best positive spins on the music scene in Boston. I'm not saying there's a negative, that it's negative at all. It's wonderful. But what people miss as a theme of this conversation is actually people coming out to hear music and to go to live performances.
Yeah, and I haven't even started with
right.
Jerome Dupree and Ruby Rose Fox, both of whom are mostly in scenes that are parallel. Ruby is an amazing singer, an incredible performer, and in much more of a rock world, whatever that is. It's just a slightly different version, and it runs parallel. So she and I could go along another 10 years and not see each other unless we make that happen. And now I have all these ideas that I would dying to meet her and see her play. And Jerome, I've crossed paths with. He played drums with Morphine, of course, way back in the day. And when I had a band with Rye, my husband Rye Kavanaugh, before he started Session Americana, we had a band and we recorded at High and Dry with all those guys. And so you kind of elbow up to different groups of people, and it's lovely that way. I'd have to say, I just wanted to add that, but we do get out of our little singer-songwriter world.
Yeah.
Passim world.
You learn so much from each other.
Stretch. It's nice. I feel like it's fairly non-judgmental, and that's easier the older you get. And the less you want from it, you know, the more you're willing to just discover and not get something out of it.
You're not 24 anymore, which is how we started this entire conversation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's exhausting being a young musician, because that's what you have to do all the time. You have to be like, what am I getting? You're hustling all the time. Every interview, every gig, Yeah, there are a lot of different ages of people, too, in this crazy musician scene, which I'm really enjoying.
That's awesome. Well, thank you. Yeah, can you play some songs?
Yeah.
That'd be so great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's Love and Birds. Check off your list, a blood orange sunset on our first try, and watch the pink birds fly, fly through the citrus sky. I need you, need you. first love, never far behind. Vision sharp, the marsh will spin. You zip our coats into our chins. It wasn't what you planned. Say you understand. I mean, that's the melody and the chords, yeah, right? But they did this other cool rhythm around it. That's that, yeah. And then right. I just love it.
I could see that as like a punk rock thing. I could like really hard. I could see it hard.
But and that's what I thought it would be. But like, who would have said, "Don't use that part"?
Yeah,
Alex Fingerman.
That's great.
That was the surprise sessions.
Surprise sessions. I wished I were a little baby hanging on my mama's arm. She'd swing me back, she'd swing me forth, trailing my feet in the cold water. The sun came scorching down in April. He'd like to make your daddy swoon. We threw our shoes along the steep bank and jumped from winter into June. By the bridge will float over the falls. They don't rush the way they once did, and neither do we toward each other. By the reedy, by the thank you. wished I were a little baby hanging on my mama's arm. She'd swing me back, she'd swing me forth, trailing my feet in the cold water of the reedy, of the reedy, of the reedy river. Oh, of the
It was truly our pleasure to hang out with Jennifer. She has such a thoughtful way about her, and it is reflected in her music, lyrics, and beautiful singing voice. You can learn more about her and purchase her new album, Avocet, at jenniferkimball.com. As for our website, we have continued to build and expand our content there and now have a store where you can buy a limited edition t-shirt with a list of our first 25 episodes on the back. More swag is coming. Check it out at abovethebasement.com, where, of course, you can sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique. This episode was recorded at Woods Hill Table Restaurant in Concord, Massachusetts. The food at Woods Hill Table is sustainable, organic, and local. Working in tandem with the farm at Woods Hill, located in Bath, New Hampshire, and other small local purveyors, the folks at Woods Hill focus on grass-fed proteins, raw milk cheeses, and organic produce in dishes that call upon the best ecologically viable ingredients available. Through careful attention to every element of an ingredient's journey from farm to plate, Chef Charlie Foster provides Woods Hill Table guests with food that is both flavorful and sustainable. Woods Hill Table is also proud to be the first restaurant in the U.S. to receive 3 coveted stars from the Sustainable Restaurant Association as the most sustainable restaurant in Massachusetts. For more information or to make a reservation, go to woodshilltable.com or call 978-254-1435.